And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week. But they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one. And that's how we get the podcast. The podcast.
Yes.
The podcast. The Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Yes. The anointed word of AI. Weenie in the butt time. here we are.
Hey. Yes. So Killer Bees, comedian Killer Bees is with us, and it's always wonderful seeing you.
Hey, thanks, man. I'm looking forward to this wonderful podcast. You demands.
It's great, isn't it? You've arrived.
I have arrived. That's how you know.
That's how you know.
The Big D and Bubba podcast. That's the pinnacle. It's often pronounced pinnacle of career.
Oh, that wow.
Is. Yeah, here we are.
So,
speaking of years, how many years is this now for comedy for you?
43.
Wow.
In my 43rd year. Started in 1982 in Jackson, Mississippi. Oof. I was a prop act when I started out.
What's that mean? Oh, you had a little, like Carrot
like
Top?
Like Carrot Top type
right,
stuff.
Right, but it dawned on me, and no knock at Carrot Top, but it dawned on me that props are the enemy of wit. Because if you do a comedy bit and you hold up a prop, the audience sees that prop. But if you do a comedy bit and wordsmith what you're saying, people will see in their mind the picture that means the most to them. If you're talking about fishing and hold up a rubber fish, they get a rubber fish out of it. But if you talk about fishing correctly from the stage, they picture that fish they caught, the one their child caught, the one that got away. And you want to make everybody's perception of what you're saying kind of personal to them. So I don't do props anymore.
What a moron you are.
Like, I'm listening to that.
Wow.
I'm like, my friends are dumb. If you're telling a picture of a story about a fish, they want you to see. They want to see the fish.
No,
but they
want
to see a real fish.
Yeah, they do. Not the rubber fish.
They want to see you gut that fish. I know your friends.
You know, it's. I guess we kind of get into a little bit in the weeds of this, but, you know, I think from connecting with any audience, whether it's stand up or radio or podcast, whatever you're doing, I find that video helps a lot because they can see, and as soon as you see it or they meet you, you know, or there's some sort of a personal connection of some sort, even if it's just a quick little, hey, thanks for coming to the show, Bees, or hey, thanks for listening, Big D and Papa, you know, a postcard or anything, that once you have that connection, then when they listen to you, there is this, not to get too weird, but like this quantum entanglement where there's a connection between the two people, you and the audience, and that member, and that they will always love you until you burn them.
Right, right.
And then I don't know that you ever get back.
Yeah, once you lose that trust, it's real tough to get it back.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right.
I think
entangling souls and minds is a thing.
Yeah, even replying to text messages. Like we get, Shaver does it every single day. All these text messages that come, and we get more text messages now than ever because just that's the way of the world.
Right.
People aren't calling as much. They're texting. We get way, way, way more texts.
Well, you know what? When someone doesn't answer a call, you take it much more personal than if you don't get a text back.
I don't. Yeah. If someone doesn't text me back.
Oh, I do. I take it very personal. I go, okay, well, no answer is an answer.
But I don't answer him all the time. But I see his stuff.
I know you don't. And but believe me, no answer is an answer. I'm like, I'll hit him up with, hey, I have an idea for a show theme.
Yeah, but you text at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, because that's when the idea
hits
me.
Yeah, and then you know what happens? I don't reply back because I woke up and saw this hours later. I have an unanswered text from Bubba right now on my phone.
Yeah, it's like, that's why I don't text D after 6 o'clock at night because there's no chance I'm going to be getting an immediate response to that.
I was very surprised the other day. I got a text back from him. It was 7:50 or so. I was like, PM?
I take that back. Recently got one after 7 o'clock at night, and I was stunned it was from D because it was after 7 p.m.
Yeah, it's weird.
It was a binge night.
Binge of Wheel of Fortune.
So high.
He was on a bender.
I do love my drugs.
That's why that jar of moonshine in the refrigerator is half empty right now, sir.
Yeah, you bring us moonshine, it just sits there. It's like an experiment. Like we could put a frog in it and just let it.
And you'd have 6 frogs the next day. It's amazing, sir. With
15 That's what eyes. Alcohol does. We know.
So, like, when you're on stage as a an opening act, when you were doing opening acts, was there a moment where you were like, you walked off stage and said, "This isn't for me"?
There was not. There were moments, several moments for a long time where I walked off stage and went, okay, I didn't do well on that one. But I've been funny since I was a little baby. And so I realized from my first time ever on stage trying to do stand-up that my struggle was going to be to learn the mechanics of it from the stage.
Like the art?
The art, correct. Because I've been funny since I was a little bitty baby. And so the first home I ever lived in was a funeral home in Kosciuszko, Mississippi. This is my earliest memory.
See, now, this is where you're already doing it. Like, right. By saying like specific names of cities, and you just slid into a bit.
Yeah, and I saw the funeral home in my head, though.
I did, too.
Well, it's not a bit. My dad was an embalmer. We lived in Jordan Funeral Home.
No, but it is. I know it's not, but... Okay, or the other way around. Your bits are real life or whatever.
Yes.
But I'm saying is what you just did is...
You've already drawn us in.
You just did it.
You pulled us in.
That power that you're about to explain has already been explained.
Even if I haven't been to Kosciuszko, I'm picturing... You've already painted it in my brain.
You could have said any... You could have not said the city at all.
Right. Well, and here's the thing, man. A whole lot of doing comedy is gift. You know, people have different gifts. I wanted to be a guitar player. I'm not a gifted guitar player. I have fun
playing
guitar.
You're pretty good. I've heard
you're a really good guitar
player. Yeah, I'm okay, but not world class. But I have been given a gift, a God-given gift of levity. And the story about the funeral home, I was a toddler, and I had the run of the place, and I saw sad people come and go from where I lived and learned that I could do cute little silly things, and the crying people would stop crying and come over and smile and talk to me.
Wow.
In retrospect, they were at funerals and needed a distraction. But to me, that's what has fueled my compulsion my entire life, to make people laugh and smile. I don't do well around stoic people because I think we should all get up every day and act joyous for the day, another day God gave us, until at least 10:30 or 11, when we figure out it's going to suck like yesterday. but a lot of it is gift. You know, you can't teach funny. Now people can memorize jokes and stuff, but funny is a gift. You know, and so to steward over that gift, that's where the hard part is. That's the struggle. Because it is so detail-oriented, and you have to go through so many years of doing it wrong, because the only way to learn it is to do stand-up under duress. You have to be in front of an audience that's judging you. You can't stand in front of a mirror and recite your act and grow from it, because you've got to do it under duress, where your motor skills get wonky, where you're breathing is different, because people stress. Are sitting there staring at you, and it's make or break every time you walk on stage. So the key, and all this is my humble opinion, the key to it is to get your heart broken on stage so many times that you have that emotional scar tissue that protects you, and you get to a point where you went, okay, well, I've said that line backwards. You know, I did that sentence back. That's what happened. So that's the learning curve. It's a very emotionally taxing art form, especially when you're starting out at it, because there are so many mistakes you make that you only learn that mistake by doing it on stage in front of people.
It's terrifying.
Do you ever see someone like on TikTok or a viral video of some sort online, and that is not a seasoned comedian, Mm-hmm. That is, and they're like really naturally good at it.
Yeah, and you can tell people. You can tell people when they're brand new comics. You can tell from their personality and their persona on stage that they'll be able to do this great. And it's still the learning curve, but some people just have that particular gift of personality / cadence, timing, delivery, all that.
Did your accent help you a lot, you think?
People recognize my voice, and it has served me well. What served me was when I started getting traction as a comic, what served me was coming to Nashville instead of going to L.A. or New York, where I would be in a line behind 200 other comics and I would be judged by my accent.
Mm-hmm.
So flashback to 1984 when I came to Nashville, that's when I popped because I sounded like I belonged.
You had so much going for you, though, because you have a great name, Killer Bees. Is your name, B-E-A-Z. That, I mean, just like Big D and Bubba. If it was Derek and Sean, it wouldn't be the same show.
No.
Right, and that has served me well, and it was not by design. You know, I had no idea that I needed a name that was memorable. But now, fast forward, I talk to people all the time that go, Bees, we went to so-and-so and saw a comedian. He was great. And I'll be like, well, what's his name? Because I probably know him. Can't remember. Mm. And so then it finally dawned on me, wow, you know, thank you, Lord. I didn't even know I was getting that
stumbled
gift.
Stumbled into brilliance.
Right. Well, when I was playing blues guitar in Mississippi, people call me Bees my whole life because my last name's Beasley. I would do my little guitar thing.
Oh, my God, I didn't know your last name was Beasley. I thought it was Bees. I really did.
Oh, really?
I did.
Yeah, see, but you know how they'll abbreviate your last name. So they call me Bees, so I'd do my little guitar thing, and the people that knew me would go, that was Killer Bees. And the people that didn't know me thought that was my stage name, that the Killer Bees on guitar with whatever garage band. So when I started doing stand-up the last week of June 1982, I kept that stage name. And lo and behold, it has served me well because, once again, like you said, it is absolutely memorable.
It's memorable. And then, of course, you have that. You have the name. And then you also have the accent to go with it, which also makes you memorable.
Hey, does spirituality play a big role in comedy?
You know what? It depends on the person. It depends on the person. I changed my life 4 years ago, something like that, and I have realized that the blessings that come to my career are tenfold now to what they were when I wasn't given that thanks to God for my art form and for keeping me in it. So for me personally, spirituality is a big part of it because that's where my gift came from to start with. We opened... Every show I do, me and my opening acts huddle up and pray over that show every single time. And so it's a life-changing thing when you get yourself right with God, and it gives you so much more courage, so much more resilience.
Also probably gives you a lot of grace to yourself.
Correct. And you learn to give grace to others. You know, old-timey days, somebody would say something to the audience, and the thing where you slam this heckler, yada, yada. But now I would rather treat them with love, you know, and go, man, I get what you're saying, and continue. So it's
Is that how you handle hecklers now?
Yeah. You know,
you probably don't get a lot of hecklers.
And it was, I don't. But, you know, it was so in vogue, you know, when people still have the concept of they'll come up to me before, hey, if you need somebody to mess with, you know, but that's not what the art form
people
is.
People would do that?
Oh, yeah. They always do that. But that's not the art form, you know?
Like, My friend's dumb. You can pick up your bees.
I would do that to Bubba all the time. He likes it. He wants you to talk to him. Bring him on stage. He loves it. Who are some of the art? Who are the comedians like that you really like that are out right now?
That are out right now? There's a bunch of them. A lot of the new guys coming up, I'm not in sync with them yet because I see so many little reels that they're making of crowd work, which is generally kind of set up, and it's not the same art form as having to write and craft a story that plays a movie scene in the audience's head. And that is my goal, is for people to see it, to see the story in their head. And so that's the way I address the art form. And so, you know, you can get a rise out of the audience doing a smart aleck remark to somebody that's talking to you in the audience. But once again, I know 300 million people that can stand around and make smart aleck remarks to their buddies and make you laugh.
Do you ever find that people who get or hecklers can turn an audience on to your behalf? Like, or does it?
Well, I feel like, and I'm not trying to be uppity, but I feel like I have kind of transcended the situation where I need to slam a heckler. You know, people don't heckle unless they're bored.
First of all, that's true.
You know,
but
so
then again, there's a lot of people who go to comedy clubs and that's their thing, is they're like, I'm going to go and heckle.
Or they're drunk.
You also have now, I think, a newer culture in the last couple of years is people who we're all selfish creatures, but people have become specifically selfish that everything is literally about me. So it becomes, even though it's a Killer Bees show or just name a comedian, they want to make it their show because they think they're funny.
Right. And you know, and in a nutshell, that kind of mirrors the state of the world right now.
Yes.
People are less vested. There's less heart and soul in what people do, and people go for the quick laugh by putting somebody down. You know, and I've seen that over the past several decades that I've been doing it. But I like to treat them with love, man. You got to love your audience, and you've got to. And I love the word grace. It's about giving grace, and so that's why I try to be kinder, gentler. And stand on their neck with love.
It's a far. You've come a long way since the ambulance days, which are some of my favorite stories of yours.
Wow, I tell you what, man, I was the youngest person in the state of Mississippi to work in an emergency ambulance.
Here we go.
And I was a little too funny for the ambulance business.
How many times did you say, well, this is how we deal with it?
And look, I was 17. My partner was 18. He was the driver.
Gosh.
I was the guy that worked on you in the back. And we were both kind of small in stature, yeah, if you will. And I became the king of going, dang, dude, your leg is jacked up. Oh, my gosh.
Did it help?
Now, how much did you weigh? 356 pounds. That is amazing. Can you crawl over there and get in that ambulance so we don't have to touch you?
I bet you can't crawl over there. I bet you can't.
Yes, I bet you can't.
No way.
I'll hold your beer.
I'll give you a beer. There's a beer inside that ambulance.
I was also good at, you know what? If we called you a cab, you would save so much money for your family.
Did you tell them that?
Yes. Dude, I was great at that. Well, we would go on calls in like these, I'm going to say flop house, the big buildings, no elevator, rickety stairs that go up three flights are like 2 inches wide, you know, and somebody had drank camphor liniment instead of castor oil because they couldn't read good, you know, not a super emergency. I'm like, you know what, let's get you a cab because we don't want to have to carry you down there.
Have you seen the stair chairs and all that they have now? You strap them into a chair, and it's got little, it looks like tanks, like an army tank tracks, and it'll go down the stairs, and you're like, two people, get people down the stairs without a problem now.
Between you and Bubba, I love hearing, I don't like blood and guts and that kind of stuff. I don't do well with, I cut my finger off. I can't see the picture. But hearing you and Bubba when he was doing the fire department stuff.
Right.
The story that always sticks out to me. It's not a gross story. Is him telling me how that? Oh God, I hope I can say it. I don't want to get you in trouble or anything. But just talking about people who are older and their skin, they don't use lotion.
Oh, the flakes.
And he said they would be backlit, and you would move them, and you would see this dust, but
right,
it's skin flakes in the air.
We call it pet dander.
Well, it's for whatever reason, it stuck to me because I was like, I can
it'll
see
stick
that.
To you. No,
well,
dude, I did shows at the Villages down in Florida.
Yeah.
We did two shows, early shows, 3 o'clock, so they could get out of there and make it to Senior Discount at Golden Corral.
Sure.
But the midnight show was at 6.
you do military time so they get there.
Yeah, and that was amazing, man. There's all the old single men were chasing women. They had their little gangs. Yeah, but they're like, really? They're like, literally, they're like biker gangs, but it's golf carts.
Uh-huh.
And so, but they have their colors, Carson. They've got their vest. They're not. They're
Are
not
you
leather.
Kidding me? They wore the vests and everything.
Yeah, but they're crocheted. They're not leather. And they've got their slogans: "Born to raise grandkids." One of the groups was called the Bruisers. Bruiser.
Because they're covered in bruises?
Because they're on blood thinners. So.
Yeah. I hear that it's like the highest STDs in the world is there.
Right. And I'm stupid me. I don't shut up. But I asked them when I got down that they confirmed it. I'm like, holy moly. We flew to Orlando and I had Terry, my wife corporate, was with me. And I'm looking out the window. I go, look at all those cotton fields. She's like, dude, that's gray hair. So.
Terry's funnier than you are.
Don't ever say that to me.
You almost have to have someone like in your life that is opposite of you, but also the same as you.
Keeps you in check.
The core beliefs are the same, I guess. But she's got to be able to kind of. Does she ever go? That's too much.
Constantly.
And do you listen? Do you listen, or do you kind of go? She doesn't know what she's talking about.
Well, you know, an outside observer can tell you things that you don't see. So advice from someone who cares about you is a real thing, and it should not be just flipped away. So she is often right. At the time, I act like she wasn't. Hey, don't be telling me what to do. And I'm like, you know what? She's right.
I find I do with my wife more. I listen to her more.
Right. Well, you learn as you mature. That's another part of it.
Used to.
And that's another part of the art form. As you mature, you get kind of, and back to the word grace, man, you get kinder, you give grace, you understand more about what the audience goes through in their life. Because the older you get, the more mature, the less it's about self. And that's what maturity is, moving away from it being about self. So
these are all things that you can use in no matter what you do for a living.
Right.
Because you have to talk to people.
Correct.
No matter what you do.
So that's what I try to do now these days when I'm on stage. I try to share and uplift. You
because
know?
They're there. That audience is there because they have a need. They're not there just because they want to be there. They have a need. They went there because they said, you know what? I need a good laugh tonight.
Dude, I've done so many shows all across this country where after the show, people would come up and go, man, thank you so much. We're in town for a funeral or this or that, and we needed this laugh. And that, you know, that's a big deal. That is, there's a lot of responsibility there. And that's one of the things that a lot of the younger comics don't know yet, and they will if they stay in it, is there's a responsibility. With great power comes responsibility. Not saying I have great power.
We saw Spider-Man, we know.
But when you're on stage and they're there to see you, you have a responsibility. So we try to live up to that.
Love that. Well, anything else? Again?
I think we've covered pretty much all of it.
We kind of need some gas money.
Schaefer, you got a five? I'll get a gallon.
If you came up to me at the gas station, you're like, hey, man, I'm just trying to get back to Houston. I'm trying to get about. I'd give you money.
Dude, we were filming a thing for Moonshiners last year, and I was getting gas. They're filming me from a chase vehicle. They're 50 yards away shooting through the windshield, filming me. I'm wired up. I'm on my mic. And a guy pulls up at the pump next to me, goes, hey, are you Killer Bees?
Oh, wow.
I'm like, yeah. So I had, and I knew the guys from the car filming, going, what are you doing, dude? You're an idiot. And so we're doing selfies out there.
Yeah.
It was
Please
great.
Tell me that made it onto the show.
No, they didn't. But I love doing that kind of stuff, man. I've been on enough now that I can do some hijinks.
Some hijinks.
One time we were trying to make Tide Pods out of. We were trying to make the equivalent of Tide Pods of moonshine. We made blueberry mojito pods. We were actually able to science pods, edible pods.
So you just take a pod and you throw it in your mouth and it's moonshine.
Correct. So the process of doing it was really hard.
But the government loves that idea.
The process was really hard, and one of the head guys on the show, Digger Manus, one of the main stars, called us, and we're on camera going, Digger, man, this is so hard to do. I don't think we can do it. And he's giving me the speech, look, Bees, you can't give up. He goes, where do you think Mark and I would be if we gave up and we were in this little town called Newport, Tennessee. So I go, Newport? So they had to stop filming, right? Everybody had to stop laughing.
It's a great show. If you haven't seen Moonshiners, you've been on 9 seasons
right.
now.
Tuesday nights on Discovery Channel, 7 p.m. Central Time.
You got big fans, man. Not only from the comedy stuff, but also I think what's great about Moonshiners is it has opened you up to a whole different group of people who didn't know that you were also a comedian.
Correct.
And then now you have a different group of people going to see your shows. You have all these Moonshiners fans who are going to see you live.
Dude, they bring me moonshine to the meet and greets.
And so, like their own homemade hooch?
I'm not going to answer that one. But I have to tell people constantly, quit asking for moonshine on Facebook. Hey, I know you don't know me, but I'm a fan of the show. I'm just looking for some of that shine. Not the stuff from the store, that stuff y'all make in the window. Like, oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah.
And so, I love, what is the cadence on, because it is still the craziest things. One of my buddies from softball didn't believe this was true. They had some moonshine, and I shook it, and I was like, I think that's about 70 or 80 proof. I said, my counting may be off. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm counting the bubbles. If you have moonshine, you shake it up and then you count 1, 2,
correct,
3. And whenever all the bubbles are gone, that's how you know. If it takes 8 seconds, it's 80 proof. If it takes 10 correct. Seconds. But what is the actual cadence so I get it right?
Well, and you have to learn your cadence. There's a show called Master Distiller, which is a competition show that is in conjunction with Moonshiners. And I've been on that a few times, undefeated, by the way. Anyway, and so I went and trained to learn how to shake these bubbles. You turn the jar on its side, you shake it, and the way to do it, you get some moonshine that's 100 proof. You get a known proof of it, and you shake it, and you count from 1 to 10, and you tweak your cadence so that you get to 10 as the bubbles disappear.
And that's how you learned, right? It was correct. Like they had like a known quantity.
Right. When I trained doing it, they had 4 jars. The proof was on the lid with tape over it. And so I would shake it and count to 10 and look and say, okay, I counted too fast or I counted too slow, whatever. So once you get your cadence down, then you can pretty dang accurately tell the proof of the distillate.
Isn't that cool, dude?
I think you said that wrong. I don't know.
I like so. The distillate is great.
That was a big fancy word right there.
It was a small fancy word, but it was fancy.
It's still fancy.
It's a science.
Just like you. Killer Bees. Can find him online, killerbees.com?
Correct. B-E-A-Z and Killer Bees Comedy on Facebook.
All right.
Well, you want to hear our AI jingle that sings us
the little
out?
Outro?
What about it?
So yes, the answer is always just yes.
Yeah, huge yeah.
Okay,
here we go.
Ooh, this was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day.
Come on, dude.
It was the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Yeah.
The Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
These are ghosts.
The Big it's, D yeah. and Bubba Weekly Podcast. The Big D and Bubba Weekly
sounds like,
Podcast.
Sounds like what you would hear on an old radio in a haunted hotel. You would hear this.
But to be static with
oh,
it.
Yeah, a little bit.